You're listening to the Sunday edition In the Summer on CBC Radio 1, Sirius Satellite 137, and CBC.ca. I'm Kevin Sylvester. Well, in the beginning, it was the day the Earth stood still. Then came the Twilight Zone for the Next Generation, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, that was our introduction to them. But eventually, we were watching The X-Files. For about 60 years now, aliens, and with them, unidentified flying objects, have captured the public's imagination. It's not just a phenomenon for our TV screens and movie houses. Starting in 1947, there have been hundreds of accounts of UFO sightings, ranging from those of individuals up to mass sightings by whole communities, all seeing something that could possibly be alien in origin. And the story of UFOs isn't just one of civilian sightings. Entire departments of the U.S. military have been devoted to looking at ways to identify these unidentified objects. In fact, the history reads better than any conspiracy theory, with high-ranking officers, government officials, and secret reports all involved in the story of UFO encounters. David Cherniak has a lifelong interest in UFOs, starting from his own mysterious experience as a child. Now he's taken that interest and used it as a starting point to explore this rich history. And what he's found, he has put together in a new documentary, UFOs, The Secret History. And David joins me in our Toronto studio. David, welcome.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you.
You chuckled there when I said mysterious encounters.
I chuckled
in
mysterious. I chuckled when you said hundreds of sightings since 1947. In fact, there have been countless, but certainly numbering in the tens of thousands of reports.
Really?
Since 1947, yeah.
I want to go back to, though, that
mysterious?
The mysterious
yeah.
Well, child. We'll
so
get into
mysterious.
The tens of thousands in a second. What happened?
It wasn't so mysterious. It was, I was home from school for lunch. I was a budding boy astronomer, really on my way to a career path in astrophysics. I charted it out, really, by, I think, age 11. And I heard the tail end of a news report that a flying saucer had been seen and children were hiding under their beds.
Huh.
Now, I immediately assumed that it was local, and maybe I was wrong about that, but when I walked back to school, I was eagerly scanning the skies as a boy astronomer. Boy, you know, like, hey, flying saucers. When I got to the very wide open playing ground in a very clear blue prairie sky, not a cloud in sight, I spotted a red dot. You know, I had to blink a few times. Were my eyes deceiving me? Like, this was just a red dot, and it was very, very high. I kind of hurried to the building of the school and kind of lined it up with the edge of the building to see whether it was drifting, you know, mm-hmm. like a balloon would. And I watched it for 5 minutes, at least, before the bell rang and we went in for the afternoon school session. Didn't move a bit.
Even though the sky would have been moving as a young actor.
You would have thought that a prairie wind, you know, would have been carrying that sucker along quite a ways over 5 minutes, but it didn't move a bit in relation to the edge of the building.
Huh.
So I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a weather balloon, you know, and it was just a very dead day at that altitude. Who knows? But it certainly stimulated my interest, and that night I went to the library and took out every book I could find on flying saucers, the quality of which, looking back, was actually very, very, very low. But it stimulated an interest for a couple of years. And at the end of a couple of years, with a driver's license and girls and university, which I ended up doing physics, by the way, I kind of put it aside. I wasn't, you know, I basically come to the conclusion, yeah, we'll just from an astronomical point of view, we must be visited every once in a while, you know, and whether they know it or know anything about it, I'll probably never find out, you know, because if they do, they're probably not safe.
But it instilled in you, it seems, if not a lack of cynicism, but an openness to the believability of them.
Yeah, but that mostly came from my readings in astronomy. You know, I end my film with a section on just the astronomical facts of our existence, and it's subtitled The Reality. And the reality is, you know, the astronomical facts are pretty fascinating when you line them up in relationship to the subject of extraterrestrial visitation. The universe is 13.6 billion years old, give or take, I think. There are two estimates, and they vary by 100 million years. Our solar system is only 4.5 billion years old. There are half a trillion stars in just our local galaxy. There are trillions of galaxies out there. The astronomical facts say if there is other intelligent life in this universe, it probably developed much, much earlier than us. They could have anywhere between 2 to 7 billion years head start on us. For us to believe that they couldn't have sidestepped our present physical law, which says that it's very difficult to get over vast distances, the speed of light, for instance, that they couldn't have figured out a way around that and fly around to look at interesting emerging civilizations, you know, I think is extremely arrogant. We don't understand very much about the universe. We think we do. We're very effective in utilizing what we do understand about the universe. But we really don't understand how the universe works at all. You know,
so when we're conceptualizing, you used the term earlier, flying saucer. When we're conceptualizing how they might get around,
yeah,
we're thinking how we might get around.
How we might get around.
You used the term flying saucer. I mentioned that. That actually is part of the story of how human beings have reported these sightings. But the flying saucer itself seems to go back to 47 in Roswell, right?
It goes back to an AP headline writer. An Associated Press headline writer who listened to the description that Kenneth Arnold gave on the 24th of June, 1947, where he said, they seem to move like saucers would if you skip them on water.
Mm-hmm.
And some AP headline writer said, flying saucers.
So here's a question I have for you. Now, if maybe that put into people's mind the suggestion that they should be looking for these things, the way that when you were a kid, it put into your mind the
sure.
suggestion that something might be up there.
Right.
So how do you separate that from scientifically provable, observable contact?
Very difficult. And so what that gave rise to, and as it gave rise to a post-war mythology, right? A post-war mythology that was very, very strong, you know, and psychologically active. People had just come through this incredibly destructive war. They had just seen the birth of the most destructive munition that humankind had ever invented, and they saw it applied. I think human beings were traumatized and looking for something, you know, some meaning in what this was all about, and a way to place ourselves in this wider cosmos that we were becoming aware of from about the 1920s on. And so what that gave rise to, what it gave birth to, was a new myth, like a psychoactive myth,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's the mythology around the phenomenology, what people were actually seeing, what they were reporting, how they were interpreting it, how it was being reinterpreted within the culture. That mythology became very powerful very quickly within a couple of years and really made it very difficult to determine if there was any kind of extraterrestrial reality going on. It scared the scientists away, you know, as people started saying, I was talking to the Space Brothers, which they were doing in the early 50s, and the Space Brothers said, you got to clean up your act, almost like in the day the Earth stood still, which just preceded that whole contactee movement by a couple of years. Then suddenly, you know, this thing took off. It really began to scare the scientists away, and I think while all these reports do not add up to incontrovertible evidence from a scientific point of view, what they do add up to is something that's very compelling. And the attitude of science, however, has been to look the other way, pretend it doesn't go on, or to denigrate it, you know, I think unfairly.
I want to get to the science in a second, but
yeah.
It's interesting when you talk about the psycho-mythologizing around this. One of the things your documentary looks at is how that's changed over time. At the beginning, in, say, The Earth Stood Still, the aliens are coming to tell us, you boneheads, you're going to blow up the world and die. But how did it change to today? Like, what are some of the, I guess, highlights in the way that it changed between then and now?
Well, you can't really separate the mythology from what's getting reported. That's the interesting thing. There's this feedback loop going on. So the mythology didn't have its own existence. The mythology For instance, in the late 1980s, UFO abductions started to appear within the culture. They had appeared within UFO researchers about 5 or 6 years earlier, but it kind of took off in the culture. And that, in a way, along with some very mysterious documents that were released in the around the same time, fed into the shows like The X-Files coming on with their essentially view of the world that there's a secret government conspiring to keep deep, dark secrets away from us. But in the culture, if you look on, well, if you look at the UFO abduction experience, the fundamental theme that runs through it is powerlessness. These people who report these things always say, "I was powerless to resist." Mm-hmm. Right? What's going on with individuals in the culture at that time? A growing sense of powerlessness, of control over their lives in the wider sense. Also being reported in the UFO abduction experience, there's one of the common things is this epiphany experience where the aliens, whatever they were or are, take them and show them on a screen the ecological destruction of the Earth, for instance. You know, a strong theme of ecological destruction, and also hybrids being created on a massive scale. Well, what's
genetic hybrids between human and alien?
Yes,
or whatever.
And what's going on in the culture is a beginning concern about our ability to genetically manipulate our environment and ourselves.
Well, maybe you argue too that this is actually hurting the possibility of trying to get at the science, going back to the science again.
It really hurts it because it's the cultural artifacts scare the scientists away. A scientist, in my film points out, scientists are not a very courageous lot. If you start to explore this as a scientist, you run the risk of getting your head chopped off. There's as the film points out, there's a very long history of scientific kind of involvement in studying the phenomena, and it's not a very flattering one to the scientists involved.
Because they're usually politically motivated.
They were politically motivated. They were politically and monetarily motivated.
To debunk. Why?
Two reasons. In the first study, which was done in 1953, the concern was national security. They had just come off this enormous flap over the skies in Washington, D.C., which tied up communications for up to 45 minutes. As the CIA guy in my film says, you couldn't get through to the Pentagon if you were calling. Well, this scared the hell out of people within the intelligence establishment. What if the Russians attacked? What if the Russians created a UFO scare and attacked us, right? During this UFO scare, nobody would know until it was all over. So that got President Truman really concerned, and he let it be known to his intelligence and security board that he wanted to find out what was going on with this phenomenon. Well, they had to come up with something, but that first scientific study, they looked at 12 cases of the Air Force's 283 unknowns at the time, and they concluded because some of them could be explained, could is really the operative word here because they really stretched it if you take a look at the details, because some of them could be explained, all of them probably could be explained, and therefore there was really nothing of reality to take concern of. But there was a national security concern, as we had just seen, and therefore we had to debunk the phenomena to desensitize the population to these things that they're seeing in the sky. And that actually, well, there's no definitive evidence that became the Air Force's operation manual for the next 15 years, but it certainly appears that way from their behavior.
Are you hoping, I guess, that your documentary will spur somebody to at least go, okay,
no,
let's
I think
dispassionately look at this?
I couldn't put my hopes that high. What I would hope is that in order to understand a phenomenon, you have to understand its history. And so few people understand the history of this phenomenon, which is fascinating and complex and reflects poorly on a lot of things and reflects well on a lot of things. And I think if people can have another entry that they can look at and say, oh, that's the history of this phenomenon. Oh, that's why we probably shouldn't be too quick to ridicule it or disbelieve it. Let's keep an open mind and hope that the time rolls around when our scientists can at least get the courage the courage up to really take a look at the phenomena.
There's an interesting metaphor where you say they might, one of the oppositions is people say, well, if they're here, then why aren't they contacting us? Why aren't they saying hello? And you say...
Yeah, well, I say that, you know, given the that age disparity of the universe, given the fact that they may be millions, if not billions of years ahead of us, that for them to contact us would have as much sense as us leaning over an anthill and saying, take me to your leader.
That disparity just isn't there.
No. I mean, stop to think about it. How would you communicate with a proto-human being of just 2 to 3 million years ago?
Uh-huh.
There probably would be a little bit, but for something that's completely other and alien has developed elsewhere, there's a huge disparity there, enormous disparity.
You said a couple of minutes ago that you hope that people would at least recognize the possibility that we're being visited. You've been researching this. You had that mysterious experience when you were a kid. What's your conviction?
Conviction is probably not the right word. I think you can't help but start to formulate, unconsciously, you can't help but start to formulate a belief, you know. But that's the operative word. It is a belief, you know, short of me having an actual experience, which would be, to me, completely unambiguously some kind of visitation by someone from somewhere else, which I haven't. You know, one red dot in a prairie sky does not constitute that kind of an experience. But I know people who have had that kind of experience, and it does change them. They no longer believe they know.
They know they know.
They know they know. So I just have a belief after looking at the phenomenon, looking at these couple of hundred core sightings, which are multiple witnesses, simultaneous instrument tracking, and I line that up with my understanding of the age of the universe and our Johnny-come-lately position within the age of the universe, and I have a core belief we're being visited. I'm sure we are. I don't have any doubt. It would be senseless for that not to be taking place.
Well, David, thanks for visiting us in our studio today.
My pleasure.
David Cherniak is a documentary filmmaker based in Toronto. His new feature, UFOs, The Secret History, airs this coming Tuesday on the History Channel.